And we move to the fifth case this morning, or this afternoon, United States versus Love. Okay, Ms. Brown, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Attorney Russell Brown. I represent Mr. Bryant Love in this matter. Due to the time constraints, respectfully, I'm going to rely upon the brief for most of the arguments. I'm going to focus our time here on the application of 2K2.1, which is a four-point enhancement for a firearm in connection with another felony, and also the government's cross-appeal with respect to the Indiana State conviction for battery and whether or not that is a predicate offense under the ACCA. With regards to the application of 2K2.1, again, the four-point enhancement, the sentencing guidelines indicate that the defendant used or possessed any firearm and ammunition in connection with another felony offense, then the offense level can be enhanced by 4 points. Application note states that it applies if a firearm is found in close proximity to drugs, drug manufacturing materials, or drug paraphernalia. The application, Mr. Love contends that the district court erred in its application of this four-point enhancements for two main reasons. One, it relied upon inaccurate information and or speculation in making its finding. Due process requires that the sentencing determinations made be made upon reliable evidence rather than speculation or unfounded allegations. This court, United States versus Bradley of 2010. In order for the defendant to be successful on a claim that the district court violated the due process on relying upon inaccurate information, the defendant must show that the information in the sentencing court was inaccurate. That's United States v. Oliver, Seventh Circuit of 2014, and that the inaccurate information must be relied upon by the district court. That's United States v. Chapman, Seventh Circuit, 2015. So let's start with the inaccurate information. The district court cited in its rulings of applying this four-point enhancement that the size of the residence, of Mr. Love's residence, was small. In quotes, it appears to be very small. This reliance is inaccurate in that it is a two-story, three-bedroom apartment slash townhome. The reliance upon the district court's reliance upon it and appears to be very small was a not to scale drawing that was admitted by the government that was created by Task Force Agent Goody, who was the special agent assigned to this case. There was no evidence of any square footage or actual size of the rooms of the residence. And Task Force Agent Goody admitted in his testimony that the drugs were found 15 feet from the guns was speculation. He never did any measurements whatsoever with regards to how far the distance between the guns and the drugs. Additionally,
does that have something to do with the size of the house?
It does, Your Honor. And again, we believe that that is important for the close proximity of where the guns were found to where the drugs were found and whether or not this enhancement applies.
Well, the size of the house. Thing, though, just, when you talk about the size of the house and that sort of thing, so much depends on the location. You know, if it's in some cluttered neighborhood and whatever you want to say where nobody wants to live, that's one thing. But if it's in a really nice place that is big houses around it and another thing, that changes the value, doesn't it?
Respectfully, Your Honor, there was no evidence that was submitted and the district court did not rely upon any location of the residence itself, of the neighborhood or anything like that.
But you're talking about how small the house is. I assume that means it's not very valuable in whatever you're trying to say.
Judge, respectfully, it's regards to the size of the house is whether or not it's in close proximity. For example, this court in Meese talked about a gun being in close proximity that was found in Meese because it was underneath the defendant's bed and was readily available to the defendant in that case, in case there was some type of a home invasion. So I do believe that it is relevant. The size of the residence in and of itself is a relevant determination of determining whether or not the gun was in, or the guns were in close proximity to the drugs.
Well, here it's 15 feet away, right?
Your Honor, respectfully, that's complete speculation. And the agent
testified. Was there any other speculation about how far it was? Did you offer any testimony otherwise?
No, Your Honor. There was no other testimony. But the agent did admit in his cross-examination that the 15 feet was speculation.
Did he say it was speculation?
Yes, Your Honor. He specifically quoted speculation. Another part of the inaccurate information that the district court relied upon was a prior home invasion. The agent relied upon or testified about a prior police report from the East Chicago Police Department that there had been a prior home invasion, and in that prior home invasion, the invaders were asking for drugs and guns. It is extremely important to note that that prior report that was relied upon by Task Force Officer Doty was indicated in that report that was the first floor apartment was where the complainant was and where the complainant stood, not the second floor apartment. The apartment that was searched by the government and that Mr. Love resided in was the second floor apartment, not the first. The district court specifically relied upon that in finding of the enhancement. Again,
Mr. Brown?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it in dispute that the drugs and the guns, whatever the distance is, were in adjoining rooms?
It is not in dispute, Your Honor, that they were in adjoining rooms. The drugs were found in a kitchen, and the guns were found in a hutch in a dining room. There is some dispute of whether or not the adjoining rooms had a door. There was a doorway that separated the two rooms. Officer Goody, Special Agent Goody, did not recall whether or not there was an actual door. Mr. Love contends that looking at Government's Exhibit 3, you can see that there is a door, albeit it was open, but there is a door that separated the kitchen from the dining room. I see that my time is getting limited. I'd like to move on to the Indiana battery conviction that the government's argument is that the district court erred in finding that the Indiana battery conviction was not a predicate offense under the ACCA. And predominantly, the government relies upon the United States Supreme Court case in Stokely, a 2019 case. And to make this, they make a distinction that for some reason Stokely and the reasoning behind Stokely somehow abrogates this court's longstanding precedent decided in Flores, decided in Joseph J. Johnson in 2014, those relied upon in United States v. Duncan at Seventh Circuit of 2016, that somehow Stokely, that those cases are no longer good law and this court should not follow those cases. But in Stokely, I think it's very important to talk about with Justice Thomas cited to Curtis Johnson, the Supreme Court case in 2010, cited to Curtis Johnson when talking about the definition of physical force. And when you go to Curtis Johnson, Supreme Court of 2010, when it's talking about physical force and the definition of physical force, the United States Supreme Court relied upon this court's holding in Flores and this court's definition of physical force in Flores. So in fact, Stokely didn't abrogate any prior case law of the Seventh Circuit. It actually affirmed it in a roundabout way through its own holding in Johnson, Curtis Johnson, But it did, in fact, affirm the Flores reasoning and the Flores definition of physical force. Therefore, the decision of whether or not an Indiana battery conviction is a pretty violent felony for a predicate of the ACCA has already been determined by this court several times. The only reason why this particular battery conviction is a felony is not because of the actus reus, not because of the actual touching. It's because of the status of the victim. The status of the victim was a, I see that my time is up.
Just finish your thought.
Thank you. The status of the victim in this particular case was a police officer. And under the Indiana statute, the Indiana battery conviction, a police officer touching or a battery on a police officer is elevated to a level class D felony at this time. But it has absolutely nothing to do with the amount of injury sustained by that officer. It's just the mere status of that officer or of that victim.
Thank you, counsel.
Respectfully, we ask that the court reverse and remand for a new sentencing hearing, particularly on the elements of whether or not the four-point enhancement should apply. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Holler? Mr. Holler?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I'm going to begin with the battery issue, because if the court rules in the government's favor on that issue, it does not need to reach Mr. Brown's other issue. An Indiana Class D felony battery resulting in bodily injury is a violent felony. Taken together, the Supreme Court's decision in Stoeckling and this court's decision in Douglas compel that conclusion. To be clear, the Indiana statute that is a felony offense makes it a crime to knowingly or intentionally touch another person in a rude, insolent, or angry manner resulting in bodily injury. Under Stoeckling, defendant only needs to use force capable of causing physical pain or injury. In this court's decision in Douglas held that a statute identical to this one, except that it resulted in serious bodily injury, was a violent felony. The court held that a knowing touching that actually causes injury necessarily was capable of causing that injury. The only distinction between these two statutes is the degree of injury. But Stoeckling made clear that that is not an appropriate dividing line. Force can be capable of causing injury even if the injury is unintended or unlikely. I would disagree with my opponent that somehow Stoeckling reaffirms Flores in any way, shape, or form. In fact, if one goes back and looks at the briefs that were filed in the Supreme Court in the Stoeckling case, Mr. Stoeckling himself relied heavily on the very argument that my opponent is making and relied on Flores to say that the standard should be the Flores standard. The Flores standard to review was that the that the force be intended to cause or likely to cause bodily injury. And on page 554 of Stoeckling, the Supreme Court explicitly rejected that standard and instead reaffirmed Johnson and said, no, it only has to be capable of causing bodily injury. Any force that actually causes bodily injury is in fact capable of causing bodily injury. The 11th Circuit recognized just that fact in its Cologne decision, and in fact, in doing so, said Flores is no longer good law. The 6th Circuit as well, albeit in an unpublished decision, essentially held the exact same thing in the Mendez case. So, and this court has recognized in the context of Illinois and Wisconsin's and Minnesota's battery statutes that those very similar statutes all qualify even when only bodily injury is at issue. There's no conceivable distinction in the case law at this point between serious bodily injury and bodily injury. And in fact, the Supreme Court in Stoeckling said, quite to the contrary, page 554, we decline to impose another interminable line drawing exercise on the lower courts, asking the courts to decide whether serious bodily injury or Indiana actually has an intermediate moderate bodily injury standard. And the court isn't getting into those line drawings. The distinction is between touching, mere touching, which the Curtis Johnson 2010 Supreme Court decision says does not count, and touching that results in injury or that threatens injury, which is why robbery statutes qualify. And to the extent that the battery result, that the district court erred in concluding that the battery statute did not count, the defendant is an armed career criminal unless his Illinois robbery rights were restored. But this court's precedents, such as Gant, Foster, and Shields, make clear that the burden is on the defendant to establish that his rights were restored. And the defendant, the district court did correctly conclude that the defendant came nowhere near establishing that his rights were restored. The evidence was clear that he would not have been mailed any kind of letter like the defendant in Buchmeyer was. And the defendant's own sort of, I would make it a claim, except he didn't even provide any testimony or any evidence like was found insufficient in other cases. It was essentially just an argument of, well, maybe somebody told him his rights were restored. That's not enough to meet this court's standards under Buchmeyer. So because of that, the defendant had three qualifiers and the defendant needed to be sentenced as an armed career criminal. He would be sentenced in that case under a different guideline. And the question of whether or not under 2K2.1, these drugs were found in, whether the guns were possessed in connection with drug trafficking actually becomes moot and the court need not reach that question. To the extent the court did need to reach that question or didn't want to reach that question though for some reason, there was no clear error by the district court. I agree with you, Judge Kaney, that although my opponent did ask the, you know, well, aren't you just speculating about the distance? It was clear from the officer's testimony. He was making an estimate based on, just as we all do, we don't get out a tape measure, we just make an estimate. District court could have found that wasn't enough if he wanted to, but he didn't have to. As Judge Flom pointed out, the drugs were in a room adjacent to the dining room. The drugs were in the kitchen. There was one kitchen. This wasn't a mansion. The drugs were in the kitchen. The guns were in the dining room. The drug money, some of which included buy money in this case, was in a closet off of the dining room. So all of these things were in close proximity. And even beyond that, there was definitely evidence that these items were connected. Mr. Love was seen leaving the apartment to engage in drug trafficking. There was the report from Ms. Matthews. To be sure, Ms. Matthews and Mr. Love would not let the officers actually come into the apartment, so they couldn't tell for sure whether it was the first floor or the second floor apartment that was being robbed. But there was more than enough evidence and connection here to the extent the court needs to reach that issue. If the court has no questions, I'm happy to answer any questions the court has, but otherwise I'm also happy to give back the balance of my time. We would ask that, just like my opponent, we would ask that the judgment be reversed, that the sentence be vacated, but we would ask for it to be remanded with instructions to the district court to impose the armed career criminal enhancement and to impose a sentence no less than the mandatory minimum 15 years that applies under the statute. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holler. Thank you, Mr. Brown, as well.